Club Zero, Paranormal, doing.
Hi, this is Chris Andrews from Club Zero Paranormal, bringing you another episode in our current series of paranormal-related podcasts. Now, the idea behind these podcasts is to cover aspects from spirits and ghosts and hauntings to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, cryptozoology, you name it, we'll try and cover it. Also to try and bring you news, reviews and interviews where possible. Now, if you have an encounter that you'd like to share, an experience, or just simply your own beliefs in the paranormal, and you'd like to share them on a future podcast, why not get in contact with us at clubzeroghost@gmail.com. You can also visit us on our website at clubzeroparanormal.co.uk. Of course, we're on Facebook, Club Zero Paranormal, and you can follow us on Twitter at Phase2Para. Now, this evening, we're joined by a good friend of ours that we've known for a number of years, and we have worked alongside each other off and on various investigations. He's called Mr. Paul Rowlands. Now, Paul is an investigator of many things, not just ghosts and spirits, but indeed UFOs and extraterrestrials and the likes. But more than just being an investigator, Paul is an exceptional person when it comes to the way of inventions. Now, Paul invents equipment of a high standard and such a fascinating nature, unlike this we've never seen before. We believe that these instruments and gadgets that Paul makes could actually be revolutionise the way we conduct our investigations into the paranormal, and maybe can relate to us a little bit more insight where it comes to information gathered, evidence gathered, and allowing us a unique aspect and thinking outside the box. So, Paul, I'm going to introduce you now to Paul. This is via Skype, so I'd just like now to apologise just in case of any loss of sound or the reduction in sound quality. But, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Paul Rowlands from Paradox Electronics.
Club Zero, Paranormal.
Hi, we're joined online via Skype by a very good friend, a person that we've known for some time in the paranormal community. He's joined us on investigations in the past. It's none other than Mr. Paul Rowlands. Now, Mr. Paul Rowlands is also, apart from an investigator of ghosts and spirits and UFOs and extraterrestrials, Paul's also an inventor of some of the most sophisticated and advanced paranormal based equipment that you could ever imagine. So if you can ever imagine Doctor Who or anything like that, or Star Trek, they've got nothing on what Mr. Rowlands has certainly invented and continues to invent. So we're joined by Skype by Paul, but please let me just pass over my excuses now, because it is from Skype that if there's any loss of sound or quality, then we apologise, but that's out of our hands, that's in the hands of the airways. But we're joined by Mr. Paul Rowlands. So, Paul, welcome, thank you.
Good evening, Chris, thank you for the invite to talk to you.
You're very welcome. How are you doing? How's things, all right?
I'm fine, yes, I'm still busy dreaming up ideas of new bits of technology, even today.
Fantastic, you always were. I mean, we've worked together, you know, alongside each other on certain occasions in the past, and when we did a live investigation on BBC TV, and, you know, then days, you had fantastic array of paranormal-based equipment then, and that was a good few years ago, and you're still designing and creating new gadgetry that, to me, and I'm sure to other people that know you well, and they know the gadgets and the instrumentations that you make, go beyond our reasoning. You know, they're fantastic. What you know, how did you get into this? What idea was it behind you to start creating, you know, all this in this field?
Well, like a lot of people, I was initially inspired by that certain TV programme that we all have watched it from time to time. But the inspiration was really because I was watching the programme and I wanted to see more technology being used on investigations. And of course it was very used in very limited amounts on the programme. And then when I sort of researched what was around and available at the time, I'm going back about 10 years now, there wasn't really the technology I was thinking about. I assumed there was a greater range of technology, and there wasn't. So my technical mind started working overtime, and I started on a quest of building various devices. Initially, it was alternative EMF meters, but then I was got into much more sensitive devices that could pick up and sense vibrations, electric fields individually from magnetic fields. I moved into then lighting because I wanted to see better lighting technology for both camcorders and for still cameras and, of course, for our eyes. That led me to build machines that mostly used blue and ultraviolet light. This was the area of light that I focus on mostly for photography and video.
Yeah.
And I modulate that light, so I pulse it or vibrate it in different ways as well. And then once I got quite a few bits of lighting kit, which still keep getting invented, new bits come along, I then got quite interested in the concept of EVP, which is electronic voice phenomena.
Yeah.
That generally is where on investigation you would record on a camcorder, digital recorder, tape recorder, or even a phone these days. Record the event, take that recording back home, and then either hours or days later, you'd be listening to that recording in the hope of hearing a message or a voice or a sound from the other side. But the problem is, if you did get a sound or a message, the investigation is long over.
Yeah.
So I wanted EVP technology that could give me instant responses, live EVP basically. So I started researching into how recorders recorded their messages onto tape. And I started developing electromagnetic systems that were effectively tape recorders without the tape. So I could hear in real time sounds from a microphone that was processed into a magnetic field and then converted from a magnetic field back into audio. And then that didn't happen overnight. I had about three or four, five different ideas that didn't work, didn't give me any results. But eventually I hit on a system that started to give responses.
Do carry on.
Well, I was going to say the next advancement, and one that I've worked with quite well then, is the light-based system, where that one I call it quantum EVP. I convert voices or sounds in the room of the investigation into light, and that's projected as ultraviolet light into a block of quartz crystal. And I have another sensor by the crystal underneath it that then collects light and turns it back into audio. So that one changes any surrounding audio, voice or sound into a very high frequency, high energy light source, which is projected into the room or location, and the crystal also acts as a receiver.
Is that a bit like Bluetooth?
It's not digital. It's purely analog, and it happens within the context of a box. So it's not transmitting a radio signal. It's purely light. I'm interested in converting voice into light and then back into audio again.
Voice into light, and then obviously from light back into voice. Now that's going to be absolutely fantastic and phenomenal. That's going to be phenomenal in itself, surely.
Well, it has given me a few results. Now, so far I haven't been able to record any of these, but over the last few years that I've used it, in Edinburgh Vaults I've heard the odd voice up there once or twice. Plastag, in a place I go to not far from where I live, I heard probably about a 10-minute monologue one night, very faint in the background of it. On another occasion, a friend who was with us at Plastag, we were starting to get responses through this machine, which starts out as a feedback, a high-frequency sound and a vibration. And I asked the lady to speak her name into the box and ask if they could get a response from it. And she said her name, and she thought she heard her name back from the box, which wasn't an echo. It came back, you know, a second later.
It's always good if you... I think it's always better, isn't it, if you actually hear a name or a word that describes an event or something like that that people recognise and they can associate with that. I think that gives them that sense, that boundary of more realism rather than you know, just a random word that might be fluke, you know, on that level. But if it's something that someone that can I formally recognise and it means something to that specific person, and I think that kind of pushes that realism, you know, to that person, and maybe also to the people also involved in that. So, I mean, with something on that level, what you've just been describing, how would you be able to, as you say, you know, record, you know, if you let's say you're transmitting audio to light, etc., light into audio and vice versa, how would you be able to record that itself?
I didn't initially have this, but I've put a record socket on the box, so I can link that directly to an audio recorder. So it's fully recordable. But another thing to be noted about it is, because there's a loudspeaker in the box, everyone that's on the investigation, on the vigil with us in that room, can hear the response. So if there's a noise or a shout or a voice, it's not just me that's hearing it, it's everyone present that can hear it.
So it's in real time?
In real time, yes. It's not. It can be recorded, but I don't rely on the recording to judge if something happened. I rely on what happens in real time.
Yeah, it's always the best way. I think with things, recordings, it's hard these days, because when you're picking up recordings, we've got to understand if there's anything underlying on the tape or the cassette or whatever, you know, what we're actually using. Well, some people still might use video cassettes in some response. Mm-hmm. For the filming, you know, but then you get a lot of people that might use already used video, so it's obviously things that are underlying on the tape itself can maybe correspond. But but what you're actually saying there isn't like that at all. Obviously, yours is a new technique, a completely new technique, and I think that could revolutionise the way, you know, we actually, you know, we look into this way of investigating, and, you know, and I think things like that are going to achieve massive results.
Well, I've still got more technology to develop. I've got several little systems that are sitting in the background that are just waiting for me to finish off. They work in similar principles, but they're all sort of sideways variants. Mm. The reason is I want to give myself as many options as possible. If the spirit world is there making the effort to talk to us, which I believe would be very, very difficult for them.
Yeah.
So I want to have as many bits of various technology around, so if there's a potential for a result, the more technology there is, the greater is the potential of us actually hearing something.
Indeed. There was an article that I read not long ago, and I think it's actually been posted onto our Facebook site, about proof of the afterlife, and that it actually does exist. And I know we all, you know, all the majority of people do like to feel that the afterlife exists. For other reasons, some people like to feel the comfort of knowing that they'll be joined by their loved ones, or that there is something more when we've departed from this worldly plane. But apparently the experiments or whatever they've been trying to do, the scientists are saying it can be proved by quantum physics. So would that be something where your equipment, especially on that level, to me, do you think it seems to be pointing on the quantum physics side of things? Because obviously it's going to a boundary that's beyond our own capabilities at the moment, because you're pushing that boundary to a better level.
It was reading about quantum physics that sort of pushed me in the direction of using light. Quantum physics basically is the science of very, very small particles and elements of life. And as I was reading this, it was a book I bought on the subject, and it just made me think, why don't I try and use light? Up until this point, I was using magnetic fields, which I still do. And then I thought, well, light has got a completely different concept to it. And I started transmitting and receiving audio signals in light via laser beams, strangely enough. And you can transmit that over some distance.
Yeah.
But on the paranormal side, I contain the light, which contains any audio, in the block of quartz crystal. And the concept was born of the quantum EVP.
That's absolutely fantastic. That really is fantastic. Do you think that it's probably more possible for spiritual communication via light itself? Because obviously we know, you know, that light bends, you know, so obviously, you know, if it bends, then maybe they can take different the communication may take different pathways, or could it be, you know, self-guided as it were, within that light to conduct further, communication with people? Do you think it'd be more feasible that it'd be within the light area?
I do. I did follow that route. That was part of the thinking of it, that light in itself, although can be judged as a very strong energy source, it's also a manipulated energy source. And it also lends to conversations I had with various mediums who quite often talked about the spirit world being on a different energy level and a different plane, different vibrations. And all these conversations led me to think and work along the way of using light. And going back to the quantum EVP, the block of quartz crystal itself, if it is compressed or even struck, it will generate its own voltage, which can in turn turn into light. And there are certain types of quartz crystal that specifically, if two of them are struck together, they will generate light inside the crystal itself. And that's one of the forthcoming pieces of crystal I'll be using on the next generation of audio system.
Is it crystal because it's transitional properties, obviously, because it could be used as some form of transmitter? Would that be better? Is that the reason mainly? I know that you're saying there about the crystals and the properties that the crystals actually hold, because everybody uses crystals for different things, but like you just said, there's a certain variety of crystals, but they use crystals in things like digital watches or things like that, but they can actually make a transmitter from these, or and a receiver. So could it be used, are you talking about in that terminology, in that way?
It's exactly in that terminology, yes, because when we work on a vigil and we're in darkness, the crystal itself actually produces a little bit of light in the room. And when it starts to give me an indication of something going on, there starts to form vibrations in the sound, and we can see the light vibrating within the crystal itself. So it's both vibrating light outwards emanating from the crystal, but there's potential the crystal is also receiving light.
So you've got a visual aspect at the same time.
Oh yes, yeah, we can see if we're getting audio vibrations, sometimes we see vibrations in the crystal. And last night, the quantum EVP has actually got two transmitter LEDs, a blue one and an ultraviolet. I concentrate on the ultraviolet because it's a higher energy level of light. But I had a small amount of blue light on it last night. And without touching any of the controls or the levels on the box, we had quite an interesting experience last night. The crystal itself was changing the colour tones between the blue and the ultraviolet as the audio vibrations were changing. So we were quite interested in that. It was a good evening.
So it sounds fantastic, that. It sounds like a good evening. I wish I'd have been on there, but I do. How would you differentiate the differences in colours, obviously, with the vibrations and things like that? When you get certain colours that may be produced from certain vibrational aspects, how would you, how would you sort of class different colour vibration, to each different type of vibration? Is it like a set pattern or...?
On the quantum EVP, there's only two colours of LED. I did set out to put quite a multitude of colours, but I decided to stick to blue and ultraviolet. So we only ever see the colour change between the blue and ultraviolet. But there are different elements of energy within different colours. Starting out with red is the lowest frequency of light, and it goes up through red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, in that order. At some time in the future, it's possible I could make a box that has got all the different colours, and we might see changes in colour relative to vibration, but that's something I haven't built, but I have a feeling I'm going to have to now, aren't I?
Well, I'd say so, definitely. Colours, is a universal, isn't it? It's a universal kind of language, really, colours, because everybody... who was once alive and still alive, often they associate with colours in many ways. And obviously, it's like when we're out conducting investigations for different types of events and venues that we're visiting, we'd obviously set out forms of trigger objects. And let's say if we were to use ourselves, we actually use a variation of old-fashioned coins. So let's say if we was investigating a venue that was renowned for hauntings from an 18th 1800s period, then we'd set out coins that would be related to that period, because obviously we'd feel that the any presences around may recognise that currency from its own period of time. So I'm assuming that, or I'm assuming it would work that way, where somebody or something is going to recognise a certain colour and feel, you know, a beckoning to that colour, you know, like what we often say, don't we? We often say, you know, imagine a white light, or come to the light, or go to the light, or, you know, on that scenario. Do you think that's a possibility where different spiritual beings or energies may be drawn to certain light patterns that you may...
Yes, I mean, going back a step, yes, we all have our own favourite colours. So we, individual people are drawn to specific colours. So there's no reason why spirits wouldn't feel the same. But there's also the possibility that different colours are generating different energy levels and different frequency levels of light, which in theory might illuminate a spirit or a ghost if you're recording or photographing. You know, for two reasons. One is the light might be doing the job that we want, and it might be attracting the spirit to come into the arena where we're on the visual.
Yeah.
So there is a great potential for that, yes, it's a very good idea. It's not something I've done a lot of, because some of the lighting systems might only focus on three different or four different colours of light, and I've tended to stick with blue and ultraviolet because its energy level is much higher than any other colour. But there is the possibility that other colours will have an attraction effect, yes.
Definitely. I mean, you're obviously taking paranormal investigating to a level, you know, to a new level. I mean, the majority of investigators sort of base themselves on sound, audio frequencies, electromagnetic fields, and the likes of, you know, on that categories. But obviously, you're stepping into an area that concerns light, you know, and obviously it's a different era, it's a different level. I'm sure that, you know, that's going to be pushing the boundaries where, let's say, for years and years and years, we've never, ever, you know, received any concrete evidence to state that anything paranormal actually exists. Now, we believe there's things out there, and we believe that things do go on, but we've never got any concrete evidence. Maybe because we think that we're all doing this in the correct fashion, but maybe we're only doing this in a two-dimensional fashion, where you might be actually going onto a level that's like a three-dimensional thinking.
Yeah, well, one of the pieces of technology, a stereo light system that I've built, it's got its own frequency generators built in, which effectively can send out energy waves of any of the selected colours on the box. I think I put about six different colours on each individually selectable pod on the side of it. What that means is it can send out ripples of light, and each individual pod can be each controlled separately. So that means I can generate a lower frequency on one side and a higher frequency on the other side, generating a much more energetic vibration of light. Now, that in itself might be the next step forward, and it's something I've only recently started experimenting in. But you're quite right that when I started looking at different technologies for investigations and not finding much evidence, hard evidence, being recorded on camcorders or still cameras, I know there are lots of pictures out there, but nothing that that I was ever jumping up and down about. And one of the conclusions I drew earlier on was, if so many people are out there with their standard infrared night vision cameras or the flash photography, and it's not doing the business, we need to change our way of thinking. And the way I thought from that was to use individually selectable colours of light rather than a flash from a camera, which sends out the multitude of lights in the rainbow and beyond. So selectable colours of light, yes, that's definitely a way to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think that's certainly certainly productive thinking, you know, positive thinking. And I think things on that level are certainly going to acquire more achievements than we have done previously. But now I know people in the past have, you know, we've had some fantastic achievements, but still nothing concrete in the end. Yeah. You know, we have people that have had experiences and encounters. The majority of people seem to have encounters and experiences when they're not, you know, absolutely looking for these type of things, or when they haven't got a camera with them, or, you know, and when we set out to try and document or record any form of activity, usually, you know, eight times out of ten, you know, usually turn up empty-handed with them. I mean, a few lucky people may actually get certain encounters, you know, but many people don't seem to. But maybe because we're looking, like we've just been saying, we might be looking at this, I mean, you know, in a kind of, maybe not so much the wrong direction, but not enough of the right direction, where something like you're doing now, and obviously your experiments and your research and your inventions are always ongoing, so you're always adding to these. So obviously, I'm assuming that when you've got so far in a stage of creating a technical gadget that may help to achieve the role that you've designed it for, then you must obviously get to a point where you think, no, it needs to be better. You've obviously thought of something other where you can develop that and adapt it to reach even further into that field.
I'm always doing that, and it's what causes me to keep working on projects. But yes, I build something, and then I think, oh, I could improve on that. So rather than destroy the Mark One version, then I end up building another one. But that will in itself will have a whole new concept or a whole new potential of being the box that gives us the result that we actually want. Yes, I'm always pushing and looking at, and I say with the lighting systems, the EVP systems, and even techniques of recording, ideas come along and I think, no, we should be doing it differently, we should be looking at this differently. Even in the way that we conduct a visual, where we will sit at a table with a load of technology on the table, all the EVP type equipment on the table, and there might be cameras behind us, and we will deliberately break out of a conversation where, instead of asking the spirit world to talk to us, communicate with us or contact us, we'll go off on a sideways tangent.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if the distraction adds to the potential of a result, because our focus of attention changes and we find we get results when we do that.
Do you find you get more response from in your experiments? Because, I mean, obviously you do experiments and gadgetry in auditory form as well as light form, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Do you get more response or more informational, documentational purposes? Do you get more in the light field than what you would in the auditory sections, or would they sort of even themselves out in different respects?
Well, when you say light, do you mean a recording on camera?
Yeah, when you're using you're using your ultraviolet, you're using lasers, whatever, you know, and obviously to try and illuminate any form of energy that may be within the vicinity. Obviously, the first thing that what most people usually achieve is auditory responses, i.e. in the form of EVP, as we were saying earlier, electronic voice phenomena. When we can't actually physically hear these voices, but our recording devices that we have laid out and about technically do. But obviously your equipment and, you know, your inventions are picking up on vibrations, you know, within the light. So obviously that's looking at things in a very, very different angle, you know. So you've got your auditory and you've got your visual in the light, as it were. Would you say that you had more positivity, you know, more positive outlooks in the light side than what you would for the auditory section?
An example was actually last night that we'd sat in this room in that pub we get regular access to, and the evenings we never rush things, it starts out slowly and quietly, but as our attention sort of settles down, we become more calm, we stretch our conversations, we try and find different ways that we might attract responses from the spirit world. Last night, as the evening built up, we were starting to get more responses for the audio systems on the table, and we were getting more visual responses, both with our eyes, and I still got recorded footage to look at yet from last night, but I know that there was at least one motion-triggered recording system that kicked off, and I couldn't see what caused it. I couldn't see any motion in the room that caused it. Now, that might be that it was something beyond the visual range of the camera, but I'm hoping that if I look at it on a bigger screen, I might spot something that triggered it off, something that might be of interest to us.
Indeed, I hope you do.
The two were starting to coincide later in the evening, yes. The two were going side by side.
Yeah.
But I think there's another reason for that is, there was only two of us there last night that have been doing these investigations in the way we do for some time. But it allows our attention or our attitude, what we're doing, to be very focused, we're very calm, we're not disrespectful, we don't shout or demand, we don't use any foul language, we're very polite and courteous to the spirit world, and we even introduce ourselves by our first names as a way to try and encourage the spirit world to come forward to us. And we believe that's the way to go forward. And our random conversations are part of all that, and we hope that attracts the attention of those on the other side. And that could have been the case last night.
I completely agree with you on that. You know, we've all completely and fully agree with you. I mean, we've always been, much like yourself there, we've always been, you know, pride ourselves on the respectability, you know, that we have for energies. Now, we always say that we have respect for all energies. Now, that's whether they're living or they're, you know, or deceased. Nonetheless, yeah. You know, I wouldn't recommend, if obviously anybody listening, that there is people out there, unfortunately as it is, do go out and they do use foul language and foul gestures in a disrespecting nature, you know, and on that level, I think it's just not, you know, they are, to me personally, I mean, everybody's got their own opinion, but to me that's not the response of a professional, dedicated investigator looking for, you know, discoveries in that field for documentational purposes. To me, that's just somebody who's going out antagonising things just in to try and get a response. Where they're going to get that response in not the nature maybe that they wanted. I mean, if somebody spoke to my family or relative or like that, you know, obviously you won't like it. You know, if they spoke to, when they've passed over themselves, and somebody one day goes into a building and they're looking for spirits, that may be them, and they're calling them all the names under the sun, I'm sure that they wouldn't like the response. So yeah, I fully agree with you on that. Always be respectful and use, you know, introduce yourself, and obviously then that's where communication starts. It always starts.
Well, we've been having more results, albeit slowly. I don't get a result every single time that we go out on investigation. In fact. There's more often a chance that we don't get a result, but that is equally valid, because if I was starting to get responses or photographs every single time I went out, then it would be a little bit questionable. But because of the way that we've slowly developed these techniques, then I believe that is leading us into a much greater opportunity of capturing. I mean, my goal at the moment is, well, it's twofold. One is the real-time conversation, or to clearly hear a voice from the other side on the audio technology, but is also to capture something quite clearly on video. So, you know, the only way forward is to keep advancing the technology and the techniques that we use.
I fully agree. You've got to keep it going, and I'm sure, and I know you will keep that going. And one day, I think that goal will be achieved at some point, but obviously I think when that happens, that's just going to spur you on even further, because if anybody's going to, you know, capture any form of evidence that we can take down as evidence, then I'm sure that person is going to be yourself, you know, because your advancements in that technology is a big step in revolutionising the way that we conduct paranormal investigations, and maybe not just the way we conduct them, but the way that we look at these things, and the way that we, you know, we term out, you know, how these things operate and how things just sort of come into play, you know. But just moving from that just slightly, you did, and you know, I'm led to believe you did an experiment at some stage regarding extraterrestrial and UFOs, am I correct?
That's right, yes. I'd already been experimenting with light-based technologies for the paranormal, but I built a slightly more powerful system that could send vocal messages in focused beams of LEDs. And a couple of years ago, everyone will remember that we had the volcanic eruption in Iceland.
That's right, yeah.
And I started putting two and two together very quickly. I had got a lot of equipment assembled at the time. But as the news reports were coming in, it quickly became apparent that all aircraft were going to be grounded over Europe because of the potential danger of sucking in the ash into the engine. And within a few hours, announcements were being made that no aircraft were going to be flying for between 24 hours and 36 hours. And I thought, this is a great opportunity to use this technology. I contacted a few friends. I spent a couple of hours finishing off making a laser emitter. And we gathered together and went on a hillside, only about 10 miles from where I live. And we were fortunate, we were very, very lucky that it was a clear sky that night. There was no clouds around. but most critically, most importantly, no aircraft in the sky. So we took all this equipment up on this hillside, and it consists of a box which converts our voice into light, as described previously, but this time it's focused through a collection of LEDs and a magnifying lens, so I'm able to focus it into beams of light, which are pointed directly upwards into the sky, and also an array of only 10 small laser pointers. Now, I wouldn't have used these laser pointers also transmit anything that we're saying into the microphone. Any audio signal is transmitted in that laser light. Now, normally I wouldn't have used that because I don't want to endanger aircraft by pointing lasers into the sky.
Yeah.
But because of these very unusual set of circumstances, I took the opportunity that night. So we went on the hillside for about an hour because it was a cold night, transmitted vocal messages, I played some music, some Led Zeppelin, some Deep Purple, some Pink Floyd, some Mike Oldfield, some Kate Bush, some of my favourite tracks.
Not wrong with them bands, not wrong with them at all.
Yes. And some vocal messages, and we sent messages out as if we were trying to communicate with any extraterrestrials. And I'm only looking at the potential of a signal reaching our atmosphere. It probably will travel further, but I'm only interested that if there were an extraterrestrial craft, it would be within the zone of our atmosphere, because that's where most lights are seen by UFO investigators. So we transmitted our signals and then went away. And as I was leaving, I asked one of the ladies that was with us to keep an eye on any websites to see if there are any messages of lights in the sky or UFO reportings. And the next night she contacted me and said that she'd found a website reporting, I think it was about 18 sightings of lights in the sky that were about 20 miles north and 20 miles south from where we transmitted the signal. Now these were various lights ranging from just lights hovering in the sky to lights moving in the sky. I don't know if anyone actually reported any UFO as such that we'd identify as a spaceship, but there were certainly lights reported in the sky. And one other unusual aspect at the time, I contacted a friend in Scotland, and she knew the type of work that I do. So I asked her to, if she wanted to take part, she could talk to us via mobile phone. I held my phone to the microphone, and she was able to transmit a short message into space as well via this signal. And she also reported that there was a light in the sky reported about 20 miles from where she lived in Scotland.
That's phenomenal.
It was unusual. The other thing I should add was I hadn't reported any of this to any press. I hadn't released it to anyone other than the small group of friends that I was with. And I think we did that via text messages. So it wasn't known to the general public or to the press or to the media. It was just a small group of people.
And yet these lights have been witnessed. And obviously on the same day, same evening, as you did your experiment.
All the lights that were reported by people, it was all within 2 to 3 hours of the light signal that we transmitted into the sky.
Now, 20 miles either side is quite a vast area, isn't it, really? You know, for people, I mean, you've got people 20 miles on one side, people 20 miles on the other side, and reports of these lights in the sky coming from that vast of an area. You know, that's phenomenal. I mean, what would that tell you? You know, does that tell you know? Obviously, people, you know, it wasn't happening prior to your experiment. I'm assuming, you know, nothing there. But and I don't know if anything's happened since. You know, people reported anything since that your experiment. But obviously, to do that on the night, it sounds as though there's a response coming back by ET out there, you know, or whoever, to maybe a response to some form to the experiment that you might have been, you know, you was conducting.
It's possible. I mean, a conclusion might be that the light that we transmitted was spotted from somewhere up in the atmosphere by an extraterrestrial craft, and they were searching for where the source was. They couldn't pinpoint the source. You know, it might have been spotted from quite a long way out in space or from the other side of our planet. And they came around, lights were seen of either a craft looking or signals were being transmitted back, I don't know which, but there did appear to be some response. And I'll just repeat again, that it wasn't from any aircraft. There was no man-made aircraft in the sky that night because of the volcano that had erupted. That was the Chris element, as far as I was concerned.
So that's, yeah, that's definitely a Chris element. You know, that's, I mean, that is, what do you say to that? You know, there's aircraft's grounded because of all that. I mean, and I remember that well. I mean, the ash from that thing was, you know, was quite vast, you know, over here, and everything was, you know, was grounded on the ground, as you just said. So how would we explain these lights for such that vast area, 20 miles either side?
My conclusion would be that there was someone possibly from up there that was searching around to try and send a signal that they'd noticed from up in space, that they'd seen the signal that I'd sent up.
So I
would love to repeat that again under more controlled conditions. Ideally, and happily, I would have, you know, a professional camera crew recording it all, so as everyone could judge what was being done and if there were responses, if there were lights seen in the sky. And I've got more receiving equipment. I mean, I should add, I didn't just say, but I should add that I've also got the same, within the same equipment, I can sense optical light signals or signals in light that will convert it back into audio again, similar to the EVP stuff we were talking about before. So if there is a response in real time, the system can also allow us to hear that response in real time. Mm. So one of the places I would love to go to test this is somewhere in the middle of very clear ground where there's no street lights, clear skies, and set up a transmission over a fixed period of time and then sit there and watch and wait to see if we get responses.
So that's, well, if you ever decide that you're going to do that, you give us a shout. I'd love to come with you. I'd love to come with you and experience something like that. I mean, but when you was doing the your investigative experiment, what was you hoping to achieve? What was, or the most that you'd think, you'd acquire or you'd get from doing that?
Well, partly it's because I really enjoyed the experiment of not only building the technology, but using it. And the hypothetical result would be contact from an extraterrestrial. People have been looking to the skies for UFOs for years. We listen to deep space with the massive satellite receiving stations in America. They're listening for radio signals. And there's only ever been one reported signal, which was relatively inconclusive. They call it the WOW signal. What I would like to see is a new technology that would attract the attention of an extraterrestrial craft that would make contact.
And if they ever did make contact, you know, and they come down and speak to you, you know, they might want you to be part of their crew or something with all the gadgetry that you can do, you know. I mean, obviously, I mean, you imagine yourself on that field there, or, you know, on that meadow or wherever, and you're doing that, and then suddenly this light comes down from the sky, you know. In that type of scenario, you know, and anybody listening to the podcast, close your eyes and picture it. It's good, you know, it's good for you, you know. And the light, the beam of light comes down, you know, and you feel the warm glow. I mean, how would you feel from something like that? If, you know, obviously we're going out to try and achieve communication, and it has been known or it has been reported and documented of such occurrences happening where craft or strange lights have come down and they've engulfed people in strange lights, and people have disappeared, and then they've reappeared several days or several weeks later, like in the famous case of Travis Walton, and he disappeared. They turned that into a film called Fire in the Sky. He disappeared, I think he was out with his mates, and he was coming home from a pub or somewhere, and he was going through the woodlands coming back, and he disappeared, and all his companions that was with him, they was all being, you know, questioned by the police and things like that because of his disappearance, and they thought there would be some foul play. But then Travis turned up about 5 days later, naked in the doorway, bewildered, with no recollection of what had happened to him. You know, so these things could happen just out of the blue like that, you know. And obviously, with your equipment like that, that might be you might be extending that handshake to bring them down.
Well, the way I look at it is there is always that potential, as you say, the abduction theory, someone goes missing for X number of days, and we don't know what's happened to them. And then that worries people, and it would worry me. I think of it in different terms. If there was an extraterrestrial craft up there, and they see a signal in light that means something to them, I would draw the conclusion, if I was in their shoes, was, there's someone down on Earth that's doing something different and they're sending up an unusual signal why don't you talk to this person? Because they've got a different view, a different technology. And bearing in mind, if I'm transmitting a vocal message, which is a greeting, which I did on that night, then hopefully they would respond positively to that. I can only hope that it would be a positive response. There is the potential, the fear side, that someone would get abducted. But if we lived with fear, we wouldn't go out the house every day. You know, we would be too scared to cross the road, wouldn't
exactly,
we?
So,
I don't go down the negative route. I always hope for positivity and a positive result. I would hope that an extraterrestrial visitor would hold out their hand and shake hands, and it would be first contact.
Well, I think so too. I think the rest, all the scare, you know, is more Hollywood, and I don't think somebody would fly billions and billions of light years just to come and pick a fight. You know,
and
obviously to be able to get here from wherever they've come from would take a vast amount of technology to get here. So that obviously would indicate the fact that they're extremely advanced. Peoples or whatever they may be, you know, so therefore they'd have an advanced way of thinking, and I wouldn't think that they'd come down here just to, and we'd be far, far primitive in compared to them, you know.
Yeah.
In manners. But what I mean, what you were just saying then, it reminded me of an episode from Star Trek. You know, I mean, obviously people might laugh at the fact Star Trek, but I'm a big Star Trek fan anyway, and a lot of things.
Yeah, no, I like myself. Yeah,
love it. I've got them all. I've got every single film. But a lot of things from Star Trek have actually become reality in our life, in our world, you know. And I think one of the episodes, well, one is of a film actually, and it was Star Trek First Contact. And very much like what you were saying there, because somebody up there may be looking down and found that you had a different way of doing things. You know, you had a different technology to what the norm would have. So let's go down and try and communicate with yourself. In First Contact, I think it was the Vulcans that was waiting, yeah, until they found the warp core signal, warp drive,
in
space. And then when they found that, they knew then that mankind had achieved warp speed, and they actually made the first contact. So when you said that, then that's what it reminded me of on that level. And who's to say that could be the case?
That's my theory, yes. And the person who made contact with was Zefn Cochran, if you remember.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, in Star Trek. But yeah, that's my theory, really, that, as you say, an extraterrestrial peoples wouldn't travel all that way just to pick a fight. They would be more interesting to find out when our level of technology advances to a certain level, then we'll make contact with these people. And that's the way I think about it, yes.
Do you think, in your own mind, so we all associate ghosts and spirits and things like that with, you know, people who have died before us and gone on before us. Do you, you know, would you, you know, like pushing the boundaries that a little bit further, sort of comprehend the fact maybe that some of these spiritual encounters that people have, you know, they see a ghost or anything, you know, on that level, as people like to term as ghosts, but they're not ghosts. Ghosts and spirits are very different things. You know, could some of these actually be extraterrestrial and not actually deceased people?
An interesting question, and I really don't have an answer to that one. I would probably try and answer it a little bit better if I can get further down the line that I'm going with. I concentrate on trying to contact people that have once lived, our ancestors. I'm not sure about the extraterrestrial side of that question. I'm open to a result and an answer to it. At the moment, I'm not quite sure. It'd be an interesting concept to bear in mind, though.
It would be. I mean, people have, people have walked, you know, they've gone to bed, they've slept at night, and then they've woke up in the middle of the night, and then they've fallen back to sleep, and then they've woke up the next morning, and reports have said that they had a nightmare, they heard something in the room, and they thought, you know, this a ghost or a figure or something on that level, and then they've gone back to sleep and they've laughed it off and they've thought nothing else of it, and then they've experienced weird sensations at some stage, or they've weird pains and you know, in some parts of the body, and then obviously later on, apparently, that some of these reports say that medical professionals have discovered implants of some nature within these people that are of an unearthly origin. Yeah, so these things do seem to be, whether they actually happen, but they do seem to be reported of these strange things going on like that. So, you know, people, if they're experiencing this like that in the, you know, in the sleep, and obviously they may wake up and think, well, if it wasn't a dream, it must have been a ghost. But maybe, like we've just been saying, you know, they're extraterrestrial. Maybe there's more chance of it being extraterrestrial than actually paranormal.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean. I mean, it could be part of an experiment process, but to a degree, I think if these things are going on outside our knowledge base, i.e. they're controlled by the unseen forces of Big Brother, then sometimes we're never ever going to get to know the truth of these things. By doing my own experiments with paranormal, ghost hunting, spirits, that kind of thing, it's technology that I can feel, hold, touch and observe the results from, rather than read, you know, second or third hand information about, because you're not quite sure the source of it.
Exactly. There's been that many conspiracy theories, and obviously then you've got the Project Blue Book and things on that level. But, you know, people was talking about Area 51, and, you know, that was always, people was informed that it didn't exist, and then it did exist, and then it doesn't exist. And, you know, then the Roswell crash, when the military actually said that it was debris at first from an unknown origin, and then they changed the story then on the radio to say it was a weather balloon. So you have all these type of conspiracy theories that nobody knows what to believe, and I think it's things like that that push people's imaginations, where we just don't know what's real and what isn't real. So people just, most people just don't seem to accept that, you know, on that level.
And, no.
But where you know, with where you're concerned there, I think, you know, that's exactly the right concept to have, is to find something that you can, you know, it's evidential to yourself, and obviously, you know, the proof's there in the pudding, rather than hearsay, you know. And
Well, part of the reason of building technology for myself is I'm not relying on other people's design ideas, so it puts me in control of the experiments each time. And I do say everything I do is an experiment, but the term experiment means that you're trying to discover something new. By introducing new experiments and procedures, or new technology and procedures.
Exactly. And talking about experiments, you're wanting to do an experiment, I think, if I'm led to believe. Is it the Omega and Alpha project? The end
yes,
of the beginning.
Yeah.
What was that? What would that entail? The Omega Alpha project.
Well, as my technology develops and continues to do so, especially on the EVP side, where I'm trying to contact the spirit world, it made me think that we constantly sit in rooms and ask the spirit world to come forward and talk to us, but they may be considerably unfamiliar with the boxes, the lights and the technology. So the Omega and Alpha project is one where I would hope to make contact with someone who has got a terminal illness, but someone who is genuinely interested in the afterlife, what happens to them, where they go, do ghosts exist, can they, and especially interestingly, can they talk to us from the other side?
Paranormal investigator may be the ideal.
Yes, maybe so. So what I would like to do is make an arrangement where I could introduce the person with the illness. I would have to do this with full family consent. Everyone involved close to the person would have to give their consent. They were happy for this. But to introduce them to the technologies that I use, the procedures that I use, explain everything I do and my background, so as they were familiar with the procedures that might be available to them once they pass away, to talk to us from the other side. They'd be familiar with the technologies, the boxes, what they look like. We could make a prior arrangement to try and have a communication. And after a suitable period, when family members agree, then to sit down and effectively hold an electronic seance and to try and contact that person, because they would recognise and know me from when they were alive, and I would know them, we would know each other's names, we could try and make contact with personal contact with names, we could set up passwords, some that were not known to me, some that were known to me, so we would have a double and a triple check procedure. I would like to do it on camera, so as anything that happened was recorded, and that would allow people to scrutinise the results as well. So it is what would be quite a traumatic time, but once everyone was agreeable to it, then one of the most interesting experiments going, because everyone I try to contact at present on the other side, the spirit world, could be relatively unfamiliar with everything I do. And we do try and explain that when we do our vigils. But to have someone who is known to me, that once they've passed away, that person knows what we're doing, then that opens up a completely different possibility of making contact from someone once they've passed over.
So basically, what you say, it's like, obviously, if you're searching or trying to make communication with spirits when we're in venues or in other areas, for them to come forward, give us a sign of some form that they're there. What you're doing actually is sort of kind of creating a contract between yourself and another living person, of course, at that time, where they know what they're going into, you know what you're going into, and they're dedicating the rest of what they have left life for into the science of what you're actually trying to do. Obviously, they're going to have to be interested in this type of thing in the first place. Of course they are. And like you just said, then permissions for the family, and it's a big process, but a correct way, and safeguarding. But they're going to be, obviously, you're going to make, things on that level, you're going to make a massive breakthrough on the paranormal field, as well as the people who are joining in with the experiment, the people who obviously have given the permission, I think they're going to take the comfort as well, of the fact that they've maybe contributed to a massive leap forward in what people term as pseudoscience in the field of paranormal investigating.
Well, yeah, you're quite right. It would help. Let's assume we got a result and we got a message from the other side that was confirmed it was from this person. That would sort of start to change science, and it would obviously involve various religions as well, but there are quite a few elements of scientists that don't want to dismiss contact with the spirit world or that the spirit world exists through various experiences they've had. I haven't got any examples to give you, but I do read about these things from time to time. So, you know, to have a scientist on board, to monitor procedures and everything, it could change so much.
With something on that level, because it's a very, very big level, it's a scientist's dream, really. Because obviously, where they've made that collider, and obviously that's a big dream as well. Where they've looked for the God particle, the Higgs and Bison particle. So obviously, they know that scientists are already on the big leap forward, trying to find things that go way beyond our own capabilities, and our own reasoning, and even our the concept, the way that we think. So I'm sure something like the experiment that you're thinking of, or you're proposing, or it must be catching, or eye catching, or ear candy even to scientists on that level, because that would you're talking Nobel Peace Prize or something for that level, because that's absolutely phenomenal. But
well, there are elements of going back to the quantum EVP device that I talked about before. There are experiments within quantum physics where we are looking at the experiments involving levels of light. And scientists now quote and say that their very thought interferes with the experiment. They actually affect the experiment by doing the experiment at a quantum level. So I don't see that there's any reason why, if that interference is possible, then it opens a doorway for me to say, well, potentially a spirit could affect the technology, the light-based technology. So that's part of why it all connects together.
Yeah. I think thoughts are very powerful attribute, a very powerful tool that we all have anyway. I think thought can actually manipulate things to a degree. I think people may actually, something actually pops into someone's head, a thought just appeared and they don't know where it's come from. And I've always been the type of person that likes, much like yourself on this level, but I'm not as technically as advanced as you are, but what I try to do, I can't make things like you make. I wouldn't even know where to start with, the things that you do. But what I do, I always push my mind forward and think, well, there's got to be more to this. Every question's got an answer, but to me, every answer leads another question. And you've got a multiple of doorways and corridors that need to be identified and explored. And again, each room would be like an answer, which would have another room off it. So constantly pushing people, pushing yourself forward, on that level. And I think that within itself is an intriguing factor, because people can leave a thought. Somebody might walk and have a thought in their head, thinking about something randomly, and then as you step into the same space as, a few seconds later, sometimes we can't prove this and we don't know yet, but maybe it's a possibility that we actually, the thought pattern of that person when they were thinking is actually still lingering in the area, and we can actually sort of walk into that area and sort of soak up the, the thought pattern, much like water, a sponge would soak water, which then can sort of cause us to random think a thought that we'd never otherwise wouldn't have thought of.
We can empathise with another person's thoughts. There is an element of, I'll say pseudoscience, but there is an element of thought, exactly what you're just saying, that says thought is an energy, thought is a frequency, and thought is something that can be emitted from the head. I haven't got any way of proving that yet, but I do go along those lines, that there is that potential there. I did an experiment a little while ago. This was to do with psychokinesis. Can I just explain about that?
Yeah, please do.
This was quite a few years ago, but I set up various machines. I've got a range of machines that I call the Sentinel, and they're quite adaptable, so I can use different sensors with them. So one sensor will pick up magnetic fields, one will pick up electric fields, one can pick up vibrations. I can wire a piece of quartz crystal to detect any electrical energy activity in the quartz crystal. The incident in particular was with a lady that was a Reiki healer, and that's a form of energy-based transmission. They gather energy from a source that I can't explain, and they channel that energy into a person that needs healing. And I'm not going to go into it a big way, whether it works or doesn't, or how it works, and this and that. I'll just tell you what the experiment. And I'd set up a sensor system, and this lady did it actually twice because I wasn't there the first time, but she sat down, held a hand over an electromagnetic coil connected to one of my sentinels, and she basically channeled energy, and she built energy up in her hand, holding it over the sensor. And she turned to me, this was the second time, and said, right, I'm going to release it now. And as she did so, the display, which is a 9-LED display, there was only one, prior to her activation, there was only one centre LED lit. As she said to me she released this energy, all the LEDs lit up, spread across, and then they went dim, as if there was some sort of power surge within the box.
Right.
Now, at this point, she did this for approximately 10 seconds, and then she said, that's it, it's depleted, it's all gone, and she took her hand away. And the display remained in its dimmed state. Now, I thought at this point the box was damaged and broken, which I wasn't too concerned about. I build them, I can fix them. But I'd never, ever seen this technology do this before. And I sat watching it for a moment or two, and we spoke, and gradually the display came back to its normal light level, and then the LEDs came back in from each side until only the one centre LED got left lit. And she explained that it was a similar procedure that she had done with Reiki with an energy healing, but she said at the time, I've never actually seen the ability through technology of what I actually do. And it gave her it sort of confirmed that to her that she was actually gathering and transmitting energy into the box.
So she could actually see her own...
a positive result. Yeah.
Her own productions, to actually witness something like that. That reminds me a little bit like where people, the mediums of the old days in the Victorian era and things on that level would sit round a table or whatever, people would be conducting a seance of some form, and then the medium at the end of the table under a red light would start to produce ectoplasm from, different orifices in the head, from the nose, from their eyes, from their ears, and these ectoplasm would take the shapes of faces of the individuals of who was allegedly communicating through them.
Yes.
It's the same principle to a degree, because obviously that it's witnessed, it can be seen by, which is very much like, I think the ectoplasm was described to be much the same as a cheesecloth in that level. So to me, it's a very similar aspect, but more highly advanced technology. And for her to be able to witness her own achievements in that level, that, you know, that must be, it must be astounding.
Well, I mean, I haven't repeated that since, so it's been a number of years since I've done that. I mean, I'd love to set up a whole series of tests to do that again. I mean, I've got more sensor machines, I've got more sensors to connect up with them in different ways, so I could expand on the experiments quite considerably. But that was actually done in normal daylight. We weren't in darkness or anything, but there was a couple of things that came to mind when you were talking then. One was, any result like that is recordable on camera because of the LED displays. So it would be very, very difficult to fake that, in my view, based on the way I know the technology. Extremely difficult to fake what she did. But it would be also interesting to do it in darkness and to look at the image illuminated by both infrared light and ultraviolet light, and to see if there was anything changing about in and around her or in and around her hand when it was transmitting the energy into the sensor coil.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I mean, that would be very productive, you know, for on that level. Very, very, very productive. And talking of productive, you know, equipment style, I have a mission for you, a quest for you to, you know,
go on.
If you think it could be possible. Now, you're very, very good with, you know, hands on equipment, and more so, you're very, very good at the train of thought of what type of equipment that you want for what specific purpose, and you know how to achieve it, you know how to build it, and you know, hopefully, you're going to get the exact results that you desire from these. And I know these articles of equipment are phenomenal, you know, and if anything is going to achieve these, your equipment is. Now, I like the fascination of not just EVP, but I also like the fascination of déjà vu, and to maybe to have some form of equipment. Now, we know déjà vu, acts of déjà vu happen random intervals at any given time without any prior warning, you know, but to maybe to have some form of scientific equipment that could actually read, if you know what I mean, or measure when a person's actually experiencing an episode of déjà vu, and maybe we can detect from that the person's brainwave patterns from a person's brainwave patterns who were not experiencing déjà vu, and to see any multiple changes within the patterns, and then maybe we could try and find you know, what neural pathways in the brain are operating where in a person experiencing déjà vu to those that aren't operating within a person that's not. Or maybe I'm just talking a future Star Trek film.
Well, there are advances in science along that route. It is quite beyond what I do, only for financial resources reasons, but there are experiments in mind control technology such as for aircraft. There are experiments of created cells, and don't ask me where they got the cells from, that become that have the ability to think.
Right.
Monitoring the correct areas of the living person's brain would be the key to it. The déjà vu thing, I think, is a little bit beyond us at the moment because as you said, it happens so infrequently, it's not a regular occurrence. You would have to have some form of brainwave monitoring 24/7 for a considerable period.
But wouldn't there be any way, excuse me, wouldn't there be any form of way of sort of laboratory testing that by, you know, when a person, if we can look at the conditions maybe, when a person does experience a déjà vu situation, and if we can look at the type of conditions that are sort of active at that time when a person does have this encounter in controlled environment, if we could recreate those conditions, as it were, and to try and get a person, if you know what I mean, to initiate a déjà vu experience to somebody while we, you know, under laboratory conditions, and obviously they've got the little electrodes attached to the head, and everything's being read onto these machineries. You think that's a way that could be a possibility, you think, it may be in the future at some stage?
Yes, I would think in the future. I'm not sure how I would tackle it at present. The only thing I'd say was to have a volunteer to monitor their brainwave activity over a considerable period until they get to a point where they have a deja vu experience, and to isolate any brainwave activity that was different at that during that period. And also to monitor environmental conditions, i.e. where they were. It could be in a building, it could be in a car, it could be in the middle of a wilderness or something like that. So there could be an environmental condition that sets the conditions correct for an experience.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of experiment would have to be done. That would be a big research program.
Definitely, a very big I mean, obviously, that's something for the future. It's out of my hands, but that's how I think, you know, like yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's a good aspect to be able to think, like you quite rightly say many times, outside the box. You know,
yes.
It's so easy to think that we're thinking outside the box, but really we still find ourselves still inside it, only we've just turned a different corner probably, but we've not actually got outside the box. And I think people like yourself are actually took that lid off that box for people to actually start to peer out of, you know, and lead pathways. And obviously, I mean, your name has been heard of by people, your technology that you do has been heard of by people, you know, and there's famous people out there that have heard of you and heard of your technology and your things that you do. I mean, our last podcast interview we did not long ago was with parapsychologist Dr. Kieran O'Keefe. Obviously, people know Kieran O'Keefe from television programmes such as Most Haunted. More recently, he's doing his own, which is Ghostlands. And we interviewed him to get his attributes and his insight into the paranormal. And I mentioned a question to him, and he knew of you and your equipment, you know. So obviously, you know, your thoughts and your developments are reaching out to people, because people are thinking to themselves, hey, now this stuff is more than interesting, it's beyond interesting. And I think it's telling them as well, like it's telling me and other people, that if anything's going to achieve results, then it's time that, you know, your style, you know, we need to start thinking like you, really, you know.
Well, yes, in particular, I'm grateful that Kieran had heard of me. I have met Kieran once before, and he's a very nice gentleman.
He's a lovely chap, yeah. Lovely chap.
What I would hope with Kieran would be to add new lighting technology on the Ghostlands program that you talked about. They had a great setup of CCTV cameras and recording equipment. I would love to be able to add a different dimension, a different method of modulating infrared light for those standard cameras and standard recording equipment. So as the one change in element in recording would then be that the light was different, and to see if there's any results that came forward from that. I would like to think that it would change the elements of the experiment so much that it would add a greater potential results.
Well, I'm sure Kieran could probably benefit a lot when he's doing his Ghostlands. Obviously, he's in search of the, you know, in evidence, you know, not in the mediumship side of things, and as people would normally do it. You know, he's in search of evidence, and I'm sure he could probably do even better with somebody like you, you know, along aiding him with your equipment as well, you know.
Like myself, one of the critical factors I always employ within investigation is the only thing I accept as evidence is something that can be recorded, either on an audio recorder or preferably on a camcorder. Because that can be scrutinised later, it can be judged upon by other people. So with Kieran's Ghostlands, they had an awful lot of CCTV and portable cameras there with old-style lighting. To add new-style lighting, it might give it that extra dimension and the extra potential of getting the result they want. But it would be recordable evidence. That's the critical part of it, recordable evidence.
Definitely. So that's evidence, and that, you know, that's what we mean, evidence. That's what everybody needs, evidence. But the majority of people go out, they do investigations. I mean, you've got your would-be investigator who'll just go out to a graveyard. You know, they've never done it before, go out to a graveyard, they've seen these things on the television, and You know, there, obviously, a lot of people are influenced by the television. In fact, I think the paranormal groups was the majority of paranormal groups, and excuse me, and the boost of the paranormal awareness, I think, came or you know was born from television programs. You know, that we all know, like Most Haunted and you know, and Ghost Adventures and all them type of things. You know, but the, I think it spans from your would-be investigator all the way through to, you know, your committed paranormal researchers. And I mean, it's not just about investigating; it's the paranormal research that goes behind it. And obviously, a person like yourself has got that, you know, that train of thought, because you know what you want to do, you know where you want to go, and obviously you're building the technology to see that through, you know. So
yeah well, as I said, there are a number of programs that's come along recently. Unfortunately, they tend to be American, but nevertheless they are investigating using better methods, and they are accepting negative results, i.e. if nothing happens, nothing happens. They don't try and generate results, shall we say.
Yeah,
and that's far more acceptable to me than a program that needs to produce results to make the program look good. But they are still using existing technologies, and I just can't help feeling if they had new elements of technology, they'd have a greater potential of positive results.
Well, television programs of that field don't seem to be quite as popular in this day and age as what they once was a few years back. I mean, when, you know, when Club Zero set up in 2003, and in them days, television, paranormal TV was highly popular and immense. And I think maybe that's because maybe television program producers and the shows alike are sort of looking at things, well, every time we produce something like this, it's all similar, it's all the same old hat, we all virtually do the same thing, and it's all virtually the same result, except with so, you know, some might have more results than others, and I'm sure that they'd be more interested in doing or re-enveloping new productions of TV, paranormal TV, in that aspect, looking at it from a different angle, i.e. if they was to approach yourself with your equipment, your train of thought, your productiveness between yourself and the equipment, and how you look at things, they could, you know, I personally think that would be a cracking television show, because you're going to be seeing it, not just the evidence, hopefully, cameras might capture, where they might actually see this on the screen, but they're also going to be looking into the next level, into a new world of scientific research and development. And the scenes behind all that. Now, I think if anything, where a television company might, and if there's any television companies out there listening to this who do paranormal TV programs of any form, have a listen to what I'm saying, because obviously it's the next step in paranormal television where we've got to leap forward. And if that's the case, then Mr. Paul Rowlands here is your man you need to contact. And how could these people contact you?
Well, I do have my website, and my contact details are on my website, and I'll just give that out if that's okay.
Please do.
It's www.paradoxelectronics.com, and Paradox Electronics is all one word.
That's www.paradoxelectronics.com, which is a very good website, among your website as we speak. I'm looking at it now. It's full of information, and it's got all sorts on there, you know. Evidential aspects of your experiments and your equipment that you've built, but I think it says a lot about the man himself. You know, it says a lot about yourself, because I think there's one thing that you've got better than that, than your equipment, and I think that's your abilities, your train of thought, your mind. You know,
thank you very much. Nice. I mean, just going back a little bit, what you were saying about TV companies, one of the things I always had in mind was, when I was building technology, is how would this look if there was a TV camera over my shoulder? So I always sort of, I have that in the back of my mind, that results or potential results, investigation methods, how would a TV camera see this? Mm-hmm. So it's one of the ways I think about these things.
That's a good idea.
I'm making displays on boxes that's visible, you know, highly visible.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's a good idea. If these companies want to produce programs of a of a realistic nature, and don't get me wrong, anybody out there, but there's a lot of programs that are based on a realistic nature, but then there's a lot of programs that have sort of changed along the ways, you know, and sort of lost the realism maybe to a certain degree. But if they want to change the whole aspect and bring in a realism, we're looking at things through a scientific view and not just through a let's just watch and hope view, then I think that maybe that's the path to go, because I think we're on a paranormal investigators. It's our next step in evolution. I think that's what I think. You know, some of us are actually evolving to another stage.
Yeah, well, I think you're quite right there that times are moving on, and say the levels of technology that I've developed would be highly suitable for TV programs. I mean, I'd love to get involved in something like that. It would allow me freedom of to record any results, any potential results. But the production itself would also be part of the genuine scientific experiment, recording anything that happened. They would be a judgmental element of any results, which I'd be quite happy about. So yes, it'd be a great opportunity to work on TV and do something like that. It'd give me more potential and opportunities.
Well, you never know. Anybody that's listening to the podcast, it does go out over iTunes. It will be, is available across the globe. And I'm sure people do, you know, researchers on television programs do sort of scan people's websites on the paranormal nature, you know, and listen to people's podcasts or whatever they need to do, gather information, gather research. And then ideas do start to build. And especially now where, you know, history kind of repeats itself. I mean, I was saying a few minutes ago that paranormal groups kind of, in a way, owe most of the births to such television programmes like Most Haunted and things like that from the past, when obviously it was in its height. And then that sort of kind of stopped. But now programmes like MH have started all over again. So it's, you know, it's on the verge of starting again there. So this could be, creating a new new generation, maybe, you know, of paranormal investigators or paranormal enthusiasts, which in turn could then spark off another insight into TV land and TV media.
Yeah, there are a few new American-based TV programs around. So there is still a genuine interest in it, and a lot of people do tell me that they watch these programs, but there's very little being made, British-made TV programs. What a great opportunity. It would be a great chance for enthusiastic people like yourself and myself to work together and have this different element of investigation, this different method of investigation, and to have to say, well, yeah, but this is how we do it in Britain. This is the proper way. Indeed. That'd be something else.
Indeed. I mean, we've got a few investigations ourselves coming up in the pipeline, so obviously we'd like to invite you along onto them. Any of those that you want to come, then there's always a space for you, sir. Always
a space for you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, we'll have to do now, Paul, because we've been on here now for an hour and 20 minutes, so we're going to have
Surely not that long. It doesn't seem like that long.
I know. All night we could speak, all night, but obviously podcasts, you know, we only have a certain limit amount of bandwidth to, but we can always save other parts and aspects of this interview for another interview, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah, it'd be great to talk to you again, yes, it'd be very good.
Yeah, fantastic, you know, and obviously you might have more, some more results from, or you might have redone your experiment then with the your UFOs or, you know, and your extraterrestrials, or you might have advanced a little bit more, or you might even have some evidence there to support.
Well, I've got recordings from last night that I'm itching to have a look at, and I'm fortunate I have access to a pub in Chester, the Old King's Head, and I get regular access there, so I will be probably visiting there quite regularly again with some of the new technologies that come along.
Absolutely fantastic, Paul. Well, Paul, you have been an immense star, and you're an eye-opener, and you know, you've been an insight and inspiration for the podcast, and we really appreciate your time for coming on and speaking with us about yourself, your equipment, and your own focuses.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm always glad to talk to you, because you and I do both share the same train of thought over these things on investigation. So it's great to have a chat with you, and you're most welcome. Thank you.
Thank you indeed, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Paul Rowlands. And if you were a fantastic man, a lovely man, and a fantastic inventor, he has the correct train of thought. You know, he's absolutely fantastic. You need to get yourself on his website. It's paradoxelectronics.com. Have a look on there. It's interesting. If you want, you know, if you want to contact him, again, paradoxelectronics.com. You can contact Paul. You might discuss further his equipment with you, or gain a better insight. You know, or if you're a television, producer, or you're looking for somebody to assist in a new television program or something, then get on paradoxelectronics.com, because do yourself a favor and get on there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this Club Zero podcast. And we will endeavour to bring more news, reviews and interviews in the forthcoming future. You can subscribe to our podcast and download them and listen to them at your own leisure at any time you want to do. If you're interested in participating in one of our podcasts, then you can contact us at clubzeroghost@gmail.com and visit us on our website, clubzeroparanormal.co.uk. Find us on Facebook at Club Zero Paranormal. Follow us on Twitter at Phase2Paranormal.
So thank you very much indeed for joining us on our podcast, and big thank you to our guest, Mr. Paul Rowlands. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen out there in paranormal land and the supernatural realm, keep it real. Take care. From me here, bye-bye.
Club Zero Paranormal.